Some of you may be aware I have been overseas in the last 6 months. I just returned from some time in Thailand, where I have been helping a monastic friend of mine, a monk called Ajahn Jandi, looking after his monastery while he was doing a six-month meditation retreat. Sorry, I was a 4-month meditation retreat. The reason I had to go back to look after his monastery was because of a very old promise that I had made to him. And as someone who's seeking for truth, you have to be very careful of what you say. And if you say something and make a promise, then you have to commit yourself to that. So 14 years ago, I made a promise. 14 years ago, I went with Ajahn Jandi and three other monks to look at a piece of land in Thailand that some lay people wanted to offer to make a monastery. And the five of us who went to look at this piece of land, none of us wanted to be an abbot, because there is a saying in Thailand, if you're an abbot, then you're like a rubbish bin. All the everything that people want to throw away, get rid of, their refuge, they throw into the rubbish bin. So all of us said to the lay people, well, we're quite happy if you want to make this piece of land, which was a very beautiful piece of land, into a monastery. But none of us want to stay here permanently. We still want to go off and wandering, because Buddhist monks are quite different to the monastic tradition that you may be familiar with, Christian tradition, where permanency, stability is very important and even one of their vows. For Buddhist monks, impermanency is very important. And a Buddhist monk is a homeless wanderer, the same with a Buddhist nun. They have no external permanent abiding, but they seek a permanent, stable abiding within, because one sees the fundamental truth of the external world is to change, so it is unreliable. So one does not seek security in the world, in houses, in jobs, in family connections. When one becomes a monk, one gives that up and becomes a homeless wanderer. So the community of Buddhist monks are homeless wanderers. And so all of us said, we want to stay as homeless wanderers, not to settle down and become abbots. But we said, if you make it into a monastery, Ajahn Jandi offered to stay for the first year there. And the rest of us, the other four of us, would go off wandering. And then when he wanted a change, we would come back. What happened was Ajahn Jandi stayed there for the first year and we all disappeared. And I went to visit him a while back, last year, when I was in Thailand. And he said to me, after 14 years in the one place, he said, do you remember that promise you made about if I wanted a break, that you would come and look after the monastery, and then I could go off wandering? And I obviously had to say, yes, I did recall that. And he said, well, I want a break. And because of that, that commitment, that promise to a very good friend, a very dear friend, I did offer that I will fulfill that in the last rains retreat. So I went back in June to look after his monastery. And he didn't go off wandering very far because I made him a little hut on top of a hill, a little grass roof hut, simple, just big enough to lie down in, with a small veranda on, and he spent their time there meditating. And now I have come back to Perth because Achan Brahma Wongso, the abbot of our monastery, has said he would like to have 6 months in retreat, and could I look after his monastery while he's away in a little hut in the forest somewhere? And so I have said, yes, I'll do that. And then in June, next year, I have to go back to Thailand because another good friend of mine, who is an abbot of a monastery, he is going to go away and stay in a little hut while I look after his monastery. So this is what we call kamma vipaka. Kamma vipaka means you get what you sow. Because when I was a very young monk, for the first 15 years of my life as a monk, I would flee the monasteries and go off into the mountains of northern Thailand. And when the abbots would send messages saying, we'd want you to come back and help out of the monastery, I'd disappear off to another cave somewhere else. And I'd never help out in their monasteries very much. And now, the result of that is I have to look after everyone's monasteries while they disappear off to the mountains and caves. So, what you get, what you sow, you reap. So be very, very careful what you sow. It'll come back to you. And be very careful what you promise. Because as a person seeking truth, we have to abide by our statements of truth. And so if we do make commitments, we do make promises to others, then we're bound to commit ourselves to those promises. And all of you have made promises, commitments to somebody else. As human beings in a community, we make commitments to each other. We cannot live totally independent. You have made commitment to your partners, to your children, to your fellow members of your workplace, to your society, to your country, and to this world. So having made that commitment, we have to fulfill that promise as truly and with as much integrity as we possibly can. But we just do our best. So when I took over Achan Jandi's monastery, I said to him, I'll just do my best. I won't guarantee you how many disciples you have left when you come off retreat. You may not have any, but you take on what you can, do what you can, and it's a way of giving to others. And it's a very joyous way, even though it can be very tiring. And the reason I'm talking about this is not only to point out the very important aspect of what we call satya in Pali, which is truthfulness or honesty or integrity, which is one of the very strong barometers. It's like those virtuous qualities, noble qualities, which strengthen the mind and strengthen our lives. This quality of being a person of integrity, keeping one's words, keeping one's commitments, not only keeping one's words and commitments to others, but keeping one's words and commitments to oneself. Those words and commitments which are wholesome and good, one tries to abide by them, tries to lift one's life up, to fulfill those desires, those aspirations, those goals that we have. So we ennoble our minds and rise up to what is good. By being someone who has dedication to truth, dedication to integrity, a person of principles. His principles of honesty, truthfulness, virtue, kindness. Sometimes in our busy world, in our societies, is not often held up anymore. But in the realm, the society of the noble ones, in society of those seeking goodness, they are very important. Even though we may not, when we commit ourselves to principles, not always get a peaceful life, we can often become wiser because of it. And this leads me on to something that happened when I was overseas in Thailand. I had the opportunity to spend a lot of time listening to old talks in Thai of Achan Chas, my meditation teacher and the monk who ordained me. And it was very nice to hear him speak in Thai again, old talks that had been taped when he was alive. And one of the recurring themes and principles that he often came back to, which I'd like to speak on this evening, is the aspect of developing wisdom in our practice. Often we are trying to seek peacefulness, but at the price of wisdom. That is, that we're trying to seek peace by running away. Peace by avoidance. Peace by resistance. Or peace by putting up fences and barriers. Whereas there is another way to obtain peace, and that is through developing deep understanding of the nature of existence. Peace can be obtained through wisdom as well as avoidance. There are some things, yes, it is wise to avoid. But there are other occasions in our life when we have to take on responsibilities. We have to take on duties. And all of you are very aware of your many duties in your life, to family, to work, to the community, to other people, etc. And sometimes there's a lot of resistance, isn't there? Especially to people who get into meditation. Often there's a feeling that this is just too disturbing. This is too annoying. I want to get away. I want to escape. But the real escape is not by getting away from the person who's annoying or the situation that's annoying. The real escape is in yourself, in your own mind, in your own heart. That's where real escape occurs. Achan Chah would often say, the Buddha was enlightened in this very world. This very world that we're all experiencing. Yes, historically it may have been a little different. But basically, the characteristics of human nature were the same. And he was enlightened in this very experience of the world. He didn't physically escape to some other place. His liberation, the freedom of his mind, occurred by knowing the world, knowing its nature, its characteristic, the way it is, and then letting it go. So it's only when we start turning the mind to look at the world and the way it is that we can start to know the world, and then we can start to become at peace from the world. Often when we meet somebody or have to spend time with somebody or deal with somebody we don't like, the natural response is to want to escape, to get away, to avoid, to not come into contact with that person, to not speak with them, have eye contact with them, or deal with them in any way, if at all possible. But that's not necessarily the way of wisdom. That's the way of avoidance. That's the way of putting up walls and barriers. It's called the porcupine meditator technique. The porcupine meditator technique is when the porcupine sees dangers, it rolls in a ball and puts out its bristles. And some people are very much like the porcupine. We ourselves sometimes deal with situations like the porcupine. We become very prickly. People can't get close to us. People can't touch us and reach out to us because of our defenses. But there is another more skillful way of dealing with more difficult problems, and that is by knowing the characteristics, knowing the situation. And one of the things that we often do is we're not, firstly, even accepting the way things are. When we have a difficult situation, then we're wanting that person or that situation to be otherwise. If only my son or daughter would tidy up the room, then I would be happy. If only this person would do what I want, then I would be happy. If only this situation went my way, then I'd be happy. Basically, we want the world to be like us, rather than make our minds understand the world. And we notice that sometimes we can't even make ourselves happy. Our mind makes us discontent. We can't force even our own minds to obey us at times. We want to be happy and we feel sad. We'd like to be cheerful and we're feeling depressed. We'd like to be healthy and we get sick. We can't even force our own minds to satisfy ourselves. But we demand others to satisfy us. And that's showing a lack of wisdom, isn't it? It's trying to force the world to be the way we think it should be, rather than accepting the way it is. I remember when I was in Thailand, I was visited by a lady, and she came together with a couple who were about to get married. And she said something I thought was very wise. She was talking together with me and this couple who were about to get married, and she said, she was in her 50s, and she said, when I got married, one of my aunties said to me, I'm going to give you some advice for your wedding. I haven't got much material things to give you, but I can give you some sound advice which has been good for me throughout my marriage. And she said, marriage is not about loving your partner. It is about deeply respecting the goodness within yourself. If you can profoundly respect the goodness within yourself, then you will be happy, regardless of how, regardless of how your partner treats you. And I was very impressed by that bit of advice. Because if we give our hearts over to others and we expect this person to make me happy, I give my happiness into the hands of another, then will we be disappointed? I think yes. But if we take our happiness within our own hands, and deeply respect that goodness, the kindness, that love and virtue, those wholesome qualities within ourselves, regardless of how other people treat us, we will feel a sense of well-being and integrity within ourselves. And this is a way of using wisdom to find peace, not by forcing the world to satisfy us or do what we wish or what we desire, but to change our own minds and look at life with wisdom. This is the way it is. Things are just this way. And that's why, listening to these talks of Ajahn Chah, he would frequently give this simile, which you have heard very often here, of the person holding their head because they've got such a headache, because they want a duck to be a chicken and a chicken to be a duck. And you may think, well, that sounds a ridiculous thing to do, but actually we do it ourselves all the time, don't we? We want our children or our partner to be something else. If only they were more tidy, then I would be happy. If only they were quieter, on time, more respectful, more appreciative of me, then I would be happy. And we hear all these if-onlys in our lives, don't we? Which is the same as the man saying, if only the duck was a chicken and the chicken was a duck. So next time you hear yourself saying, if only they could change and make me happy, then you say, okay, watch out, chicken and duck, be careful. Yes, I'm falling for trying to force the chicken into the duck. But if we are willing to accept this is the nature of a chicken, this is the nature of a duck, they're just this way, then with that understanding, peace arises. So what that means is, if we accept the situation as it is, this is the way it is. In this present moment, as we're sitting here, we feel the body, there's certain feelings, certain aches, certain pains, and we listen to the mind, and there's certain emotions. And often we're saying, if only it would be otherwise. If only I was sitting here blissed out, peaceful and enlightened, then I'd be happy. That again is forcing the chicken to be a duck. Now, wisdom says this is the way it is. So one knows there is this feeling in the body. There is this mood. We're not trying to escape from things. This is just the way it is. This is my world. This is the world of experience at the present moment. When we know it as it is, we can abandon it and let it go. So we're drawing wisdom to our meditation practice by knowing things are impermanent. Things are subject to change. Things are not stable. Things will always change. And even if we get people to do everything that we want, would we be happy? Just imagine that. If you could get everybody to do everything exactly the way you wanted it, how long do you think you'll be happy for? Probably get very bored. Or your mind will change very quickly. It's just like when we have a very strong desire. We think, if only I get that one thing, then I'll be happy. It's like some people when they fall in love, isn't it? They think, if only I can be with that person forevermore, then I'll be happy. And then what happens after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? It changes. The situation changes, the mind changes, the moods, the feelings, the perceptions completely change. So it's not real. When we start to see things as not real, then we know it's an illusion. The Buddha compared the world of change and the phenomena in the world that are in constant state of change like the magician's trick. It seems real, but it's a trick. So it's an illusion. Things in life seem very real. Our pain, our suffering, our moods, our emotions, the highs and lows, the comings and goings of life seem very real, seem very important, but they change. And when we see that they're changing all the time, then their reality starts to be called into question. And when we call it into question, then we're able to let go of the illusion. And the way we let go is by dropping everything that's false. If something changes, then it's not really true because it's not permanent, it's not stable. Something which is an ultimate truth has to have some solidity to it, has to have some permanency to it, has to have some ultimate quality as a characteristic of its nature. If something is totally unstable, is in a state of violent change, is constantly on the move, then that is not real. And we see from science that all physical phenomena is in violent movement, constant change, the shifting of electrons, the shifting of protons, the shifting of molecules. It's constantly in a state of flux. This physical thing that we call self, physical phenomena. And our minds are the same, in a constant state of flux, change, instability, movement. Now, when we know that with wisdom, we're not trying to make that still through force, but accepting the way it is, that that's the characteristic of existence. And when we accept the way things are, then we can give up all that's false. For example, negativity and criticism. We can see that that too is in a state of change. Some days people will praise us, and other days we'll get blamed. Some days people will like us, and others they won't. Some days we'll be greatly appreciated, and some days we won't. So we see that none of this is really true. It's just a state of coming and going. When I was in Thailand, I heard a very nice simile, a story of meditation practice. And it was taken off the internet, even though I wasn't, had nothing to do with computers. Someone brought it along because they got it off the internet and they thought it was very nice. And they gave it to me. And it was a story of a farmer who had a very old donkey. And this farmer couldn't use the donkey anymore because it was so old, thin, and weak. And the donkey was let loose in the fields. And one day when it was eating in the fields, it wandered and fell down a well, an old disused well in the field. And the neighbors came running to the farmer and said, "Your donkey has fallen in the well." And the farmer went out to the fields and looked down the well and saw the donkey still alive down the bottom of the well. And he thought, this donkey is old and useless to me. And this well is dried up and is also useless to me. I'll kill two birds with one stone, if that's an appropriate simile for a Buddhist monk, by filling in the well. And so he hired the villagers to come and shovel sand down into the well, to fill in the well and at the same time bury the donkey. And as the donkey was at the bottom of the well, the first shovel load of sand fell on its back. And the donkey decided, being stubborn, resistant, it would shake the sand off. And so it wiggled its back, and the sand was shaken off and fell to the ground of the well. And so the donkey stepped up a step. And then the next load of sand fell on the back of the donkey. And the donkey shook it off and then stepped up another step. And it kept on shaking things off, even though it was being buried alive. It shook it off and stepped up a step until finally it got beyond the edge of the well and went on to the field and ate the grass. And I thought this was actually a very beautiful simile of life. We all experience difficulties, problems in life. We can let ourselves be buried, to be covered over, to be overcome by those negative experiences, those difficulties, those pains, those hurts. Or we can shake them off. And when we shake them off and abandon them, then we step up. Our minds grow. Our mind becomes more noble. We get higher. And as we grow higher, become more noble, then we get beyond those very things that could have buried us once before. Until we escape from the well. And the well is the world. The escape from the well is enlightenment. It is that liberation, that freedom from those things that bury us. And what are those things that are thrown onto us for us to shake off? It's all those states of anger and frustration, hurt and negativity. All those states of jealousy and greed and fear and confusion and anxiety. It's all those states of delusion and doubt, being overcome with doubt in the path, doubt in ourselves, feeling lost and lonely in the world. If we allow those things to bury us, then our life is wasted. But if we shake them off, let them go, see that they're just illusions, then we escape from those very things. We're not caught up in our moods and emotions. So the way to shake things off is by knowing them. Ah, this is there for me to attach. I'll shake it off. This is there to catch me out. I'll shake it off. This is there for me to be caught up and increase my anger, confusion, and delusion. I'll shake it off. So whatever comes your way, shake it off. Let it go. Abandon it. And then you'll find you become more free, more liberated, more at peace. The more we collect, the more we gather, clutter, the more we become burdened, the more we become heavy rather than lighter. So the Buddhist path is a way of shaking things off, letting go of everything that is false and unreal, because we can only know what is real when we abandon what is false. We can only go to what is true when we abandon what is untrue. So if you want to know what is ultimate truth, you have to give up everything which is false. Everything that does not stand up to inspection is not up to grade. Then we know that that's not the real thing. We're going for the real thing in Buddhism, which is everything that is false is abandoned. And then you'll know what is real. So this evening I wanted to give a talk encouraging the development of wisdom in meditation practice. Wisdom in meditation practice means to contemplate and consider, to go back to the source. And that is why Ajahn Chah would very frequently not answer your questions. When you would ask him a question, he would sometimes answer, but not always. More often than not, he would ask you to answer your own question. Why are you suffering? It's a very pertinent question, isn't it? Sometimes we'd ask Ajahn Chah, how should I practice to get beyond suffering? And he would ask, what are you attached to? It is because of the attachment that leads to suffering. So if you want to know why you're discontent, why you're suffering, you have to develop the quality of mind to investigate and contemplate, the wisdom faculty of mind, to say, where is this coming from? It's called what we call in Pali, the Buddha talked about, yoni so manisakara, means to go back to the source. So if we're suffering, we're unhappy, we're frustrated, we're discontent, we're upset, where does that come from? Often we're saying, and this is the way of a worldly person, the source is outside of me. I'm not at fault. They are. I'm not at fault. She or he is. I'm not at fault. The situation is. If these things change, then I'll really be happy. It's not true, is it? We all know that even though those situations change, we still can feel discontentment. The real source of suffering is in our own minds. It is because of the seeds of greed, hatred, delusion, and confusion. All these unwholesome qualities are there. And it just takes one person to maybe set them off, to start the outflowings of the mind towards negativity and aversion, to critical, analytical, judgmental thinking. And then we get angry and upset. The problems are within. So in the development of investigation back to the source, we're going back and asking, where is this coming from? Why am I discontent? What do I want? And when we start to see what we want, then we're getting closer to the cause of the suffering. It's because we want the world to be otherwise. We want the chicken to be the duck, or the duck to be the chicken. If only it was different, then I would be content. If only if it was otherwise, then the world would be at peace. And that is very common at this particular point in time, where many reasonable people would like there to be world peace, would like there to be harmony amongst humanity. But many people get themselves into deep suffering because it is not the way they wish. It doesn't fulfill the idealism, the noble idealism of the mind. But it is just the way it is. Even though we don't want it to be this way, it is this way. So Buddhism is about looking at the way things are, reality and truth as it is, not how we would like it to be. We are often suffering because we want the world to be the way we like it to be, rather than the way it is. Reality is what we're trying to comprehend, not the ideal. The ideal is in our aspirations and wishes and desires and in our mind. So what we're seeing is, this is the way the world is. When there is greed, hatred and delusion, there'll be conflict, there'll be aversion, there'll be violence, there'll be killing, there'll be war. It has been this way, and it is this way, and it will be this way if there is still greed, hatred and delusion in people's minds. What we can do is take personal responsibility for our own minds and see the consequences of when we get upset, desire things that belong to others, or come out of self-centered concern for me, or out of confusion and fear. That does not lead to world peace, does not lead to inner peace within ourselves. That's what we can change. And that's what the Buddha's path is about. Changing this mind. And as we often say, it's better to light a candle than complain about the darkness. So instead of complaining about the darkness in the world, the lack of peace in the world, the cruelty in the world, the violence in the world, then we light a candle within ourselves by personally being more peaceful, compassionate, loving and caring and sensitive to the people we're with, and more wise by knowing the world is just this way. What we can change is our own minds. So this evening, say this short talk, give a short talk this evening, this much. I will stop here, and if there is any questions and what I've spoken of or any other comments or queries or questions you have on the subject of Buddhism or meditation or anything else, then